Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome back to Talking Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are talking about Season 3, Episode 12, Friends and Family. And of course, as always, I am joined by someone who really wanted to soft launch the podcast, but I said, no, there's only one way to go, and it's to hard launch the podcast. Stuart. Stuart, how are you?
That's a bold-faced lie. Remember deeply a trailer going out before this. That's as soft a launch as you can get.
So true, though. And of course, we're not alone. We are offering the friends and family discount for this one special librarian, Todd. Todd, how are you?
I'm good. I just like to praise both of you for making a podcast that I would listen to even without the nagging sense of obligation.
Todd, I'm so excited that you're here today to talk about this episode. It feels like a big one. It feels like a bit of a, like, we're putting a, you know, putting a, what is it, flagpole? Is that a thing? Is that a sports thing where you put the thing?
A flag on the thing, on the, and the ball, and the kicking.
Why did I go for a sports metaphor?
I don't know. Like, usually flags in sports are like bad things.
It's, we're
like
planting a flag.
Planting a flag. That is not.
What is that? Thing.
It's like more like a war colonizer, you
know, I don't know
what colonizer thing. You know, we're playing a flag claiming this.
I don't know why I'm using metaphors for things I know nothing about, but this feels like a big episode. So Todd, tell us, you've been here before, but tell us why you chose this episode in particular to come on for.
Well, I chose this episode because it finally let me know why Stuart likes tea so much. It's not because he's British, it's because he smokes the reefer. So that's, you know.
No, it's so perfect.
No, the reason I picked this one, so whenever you ask if I want to be on for season 3, I went back through the PSR Discord to look at all the comments I made, because I was watching season 3 while I was in the Discord, and I just did a quick search through my season 3 comments to like see, like, so which episodes did I like particularly well? And most of those had already been taken, but this is the one, like, I only had one comment, but it was just, I love this show. Like, okay, I guess it's the episode I'm going with. Even though I can remember nothing about why I'd made that comment or what it was about this episode in particular that I loved. So yeah, I came in kind of like, okay, why did I love this show? And they're like, oh, it's Patrick. It's Patrick largely. It's Ted. It's, you know, the picture. It's everything. It's pretty much everything in this episode I really, really enjoy. But I think it really is the Patrick, David a partnership is like one of my favorite things in the show. So, and I one episode I wanted to come on really was like one, the first Patrick episode, because I just love that introduction. I think he comes out of the gate like just a fully fleshed character automatically. You see him, you know, the way that he interacts with David is just so funny. And just like kneeling David almost automatically and David not knowing quite what to do with it. I just love everything about their dynamic. So I think that was like a big thing. But also the negative obligation is one of my favorite lines of the series. I think it's just like perfect Moira.
Yeah, Stuart, broad thoughts on this episode before we dive into a little bit deeper.
I think this is one of the strongest episodes we've had so far. Because it nailed, like, we've always talked about this, like, weird Venn diagram of, like, things we want to happen in the episode. It pushes things forward. We got good, like, in-depth character kind of, like, details and progressions. And we also got some really, like, knee-slapping, like, funny lines out of it. I adored this episode to the point where as I was watching it, I was messaging you all caps as per usual when certain events happen that I'm like screaming about. And then I watched it again on my own and screamed to myself still because I was just so happy with it all. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is a fun one. Yeah, it has like good vibes. It has comedy. It kind of has a little bit of everything. So let's do a quick recap. Before we do that, don't forget to subscribe. Find us on YouTube. You could see our beautiful, lovely faces. We don't have any wigs to discuss this episode, unfortunately, because Moira just isn't giving us, okay? She's being very greedy, and she should have a nagging sense of obligation to give us more wigs, but she hasn't, so it's fine. Let's get into our recap here. Get ready for a grand opening. Scratch that, a soft opening, or maybe a semi-hard opening. Either way, Rose Apothecary is open for business. David is nervous about opening the store, so he wants to do a friends and family soft launch with 25% off. But when word spreads of this exclusive launch, of course, the entire town and all their friends and family show up. So I don't know what to say besides.
Yay, David. Yay.
Meanwhile, when Alexis finds out she's passed her classes, her and Ted share a celebratory kiss. They both are very awkward about it. And by the end of the episode, Ted tells Alexis that he thinks they're better off as friends and co-workers. Oh, he got her some kind of stick pencil, which I don't know that that is would scream Alexis to me, but maybe it's more of a administrative assistant gift. Either way, Moira surprises Johnny with a massive portrait of the family that was apparently being hoarded by the Van Helsens. And unfortunately, both physically and metaphorically, it no longer fits in their lives. Oh, and Moira paid extra to have her eyes follow you whenever you walk around the room. After seeing their children thriving in the new lives they've created for themselves, the Roses decide to move on from their old life they shared in the portrait. Stuart, what did you think of this truly ridiculously sized portrait?
Could have been bigger. Like, I think it could have been double the size, like, maybe. If you're going to get a portrait, go all out. Like, I'm not sure if you've ever, like, seen full-on historical portraits of, like, monarchs. Or, because, I mean, being British, I've seen a load. Every school trip was to go see some form of big castle or something with some sort of big portrait. They're humongous. So if you ever get the chance to get a portrait, you may as well go all out and have it be huge. But, I mean, I guess if you can afford a portrait, you're going to have the space to accommodate it. I don't think anyone really anticipates having a giant ass portrait like that in a tiny little motel room.
I don't even know how they got this thing in there is the thing. Like, that thing is not fitting through the doorway.
Yeah. I think we give them a little bit of leeway on that, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think there's like some little kind of, you know, we always talk about how we kind of go a bit too in depth sometimes with this because I don't think a show like this is meant to be recapped and really analyzed as much as we sometimes do. Let's give it a thick on pass. Let's just ignore the fact that they quite obviously wheeled it around the front of the set through the cameras and into
that place. Look, Roland was willing to take, you know, increasing amounts of money to help them put it in. So Roland would have got away. That 40 to 50 to 60 to however long it took him to finally get Johnny to pay him, that was money well spent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really
just was. Ridiculous. Just ridiculous. I love this portrait. I love the fact that none of them are smiling in it and that it's not Alexis's body. It's just her head because she wasn't there to sit for it.
It is because it's based off of the promo image that they put out for season one. So it's like, or some season that they did. I've seen it somewhere. It's 100% Andy Murphy's body. But yeah, it's the idea that she has just been substituted in throughout her entire childhood with like them attending someone else's graduation or at least celebrating someone else's graduation that hers was going to be hosted at. And obviously Moira not knowing her name. Poor Alexis. She's always hard done by in her childhood, despite being lavished with copious amounts of money.
Yeah. I just love what this portrait represents, where it is just such an obvious relic from their time being incredibly wealthy, but disconnected from one another. That's not even really Alexis in that, like sitting there for that photo. None of them are smiling. It is truly larger than life. And Todd, one of my favorite things is, I think in some other show and some other sitcoms, they would have been like, oh, I wonder, were we really happy? And they would be like, no, now we're happy. Now we have everything. But this show, no, they're like, oh yeah, no, we were deliriously happy.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite moments of the episode is just Mark going, oh, deliriously. No, it's like, we were so happy. Like you said, because it is such a zig, when you're talking about Zag. But at the same time, while it's undercutting the idea, they are also recognizing that things have changed. And yes, they're very happy when they were ridiculously rich, but it was a different type of happy. It's like they were happy, but their family wasn't a family. You know, right. I think Johnny and Moyer might have felt like a family, but they were, you know, using that money to buy off David's galleries. So David was happy, but he was happy because of a lie. And Alexis was happy, but she was happy because she was gallivanting around the globe, learning how to sneak through borders and do who knows what.
Passing a driver's test is difficult in a burqa, David.
So they were happy, but they weren't really happy. You know, it's a different...
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were missing out on. And I feel like there's so much proof in this episode of how much they've changed, Stuart. Like, there is even a moment when David is telling Moira and Johnny about the soft versus hard launch and, you know, the grand opening and all of that. And he's like freaking out a little bit. And Moira's like, oh, I don't know. This doesn't sound good, David, you know, like, but he's leaving the room and very out of nowhere. And it's not, no time is spent on it. Moira says, we love you. And Johnny says, keep reaching, son. And Stuart, it brings me back to that moment when Moira struggled to tell her children that she loved them in like season one. Like, look how much has changed.
Yeah, this is why I think this episode hits so well, is because it's a real kind of gut punch when you look for kind of those changes. Like the small little like calling out and saying that like she loves him would never have happened before. Like, yep. They're too kind of buttoned up. There's also this kind of weird, not camaraderie, what's the word? Like, they're on the same level when they talk to each other about, like, when they talk about the portrait at the beginning, they talk about the Van Housens. And then Moira just makes a quip about, don't talk about those, like, human vultures kind of thing. It's the vibe I got from that was just this really kind of relaxed, we're just talking naturally to each other. It's not this kind of stifled parent-child relationship where you were distant and stuff like that. It's almost as if they're becoming friends, despite the fact that they are family members, which again, it's probably like a good nod to the whole like episode title. But these small little touches just layer everything so well, because by the time we get towards the end and Johnny and Moira are clearly so proud of David and Alexis for their achievements that come out in this episode. It even warmed my stone cold heart, which is impressive. I was gushing by the end of it.
Yeah, it's just lovely to get to see Moira and Johnny both be a little bit astonished at their kids' achievements. Like, they get to Rose Apothecary later on when it's already kind of mobbed with people and David's busy helping someone, and they're just like, wow, like, look at him go, like, look at what he's accomplished. And Moira, of course, is surprised that Alexis has passed her classes. But it
what
is
what do you mean surprised? She had nothing but doubts. I mean, no doubts that she could do it.
It's just one of those things where I think they're kind of a little gobsmacked, Todd, at like, we weren't expecting this. And now they're just getting hit with like, wow, look at how well our kids are doing. Like, look at how much they're succeeding. And they're doing it by themselves, which I think is like the most important aspect of it, right? Like, yes, they're providing emotional support, but like financially, they're pretty much doing all of this on their own. They both have jobs. They both are paying for their own livelihoods.
Yeah, and in fact, whenever Johnny has tried to help, he has like screwed everything up for them. So it's like Johnny trying to interfere has actually caused Alexis, you know, a failing grade nearly, and his advice to David is like no advice at all. So it's Johnny realizing, oh, hey, yeah, I can, they're not just kids anymore, not helpless. We kind of made them helpless with the amount of money that we threw at them. And now with them being stripped from all of that and the kids having to finally stand on their own 2 feet, they're thriving. And Johnny and Moira realizing, oh, wow, this is what it could have been. This is what it could have been if we hadn't, you know, bought everything for David. If we had had faith in him, had faith in Alexis from the beginning. They just didn't have any faith in them. And how much of that stemmed from the kids just being spoiled brats? It's like, you know, what came first situation here? But now they are all like stripped of all of that stuff that got in the way before. And I think the thing that sticks out to me probably the most about the whole picture storyline is that Moira is the one who articulates that it doesn't fit anymore. That Moira is not clinging onto the past, because she was the one, she talks to Johnny. Oh, John, I know how you know, think from that time and want to cling to that time, which is why I got the picture for you. But Moira's the one who more often than not has really been clinging to the ideas of the past and what they used to have. So for her to be the one to say the picture doesn't fit, and she doesn't just mean literally, you know, for her to be the one to acknowledge that that part of their life is gone, that they're the same people, but they're not. They have changed. And I think that to me is like the big leap forward in this episode for Moira to be acknowledging and verbalizing this stuff, because Moira, out of all of them, Moira's been the one who's lived in her own little world the most. And I think her not wearing a wig even is like kind of like a good thing in this episode, as she is talking about how they've changed and being more grounded, not focusing on all that stuff. If she was in one of her crazy wigs, I think that statement might not have hit as hard as just a you know, normal hair, you know, open to the world Moira saying it. I think gives that statement a lot more power.
Yeah, seeing Moira not in the wig is a really great point, because it's like wearing an outfit, a costume to things, and it's not her being genuine with anything. And getting a genuine emotion out of Moira that isn't just her having a tantrum is a rarity. Less so as we go along this. I just love it. And to see Moira be the one to impart wisdom is, I think, just really lovely, because it's almost like, I don't know why, I get this weird sense from Moira of as if she's this like old sage. It's like she talks gibberish usually, but then she just comes out with these like nuggets now and then of just absolute truth and like good wisdom. I'm wondering if just Moira is magic. I don't know.
She's secretly a witch. Yeah, and I totally agree with your sentiment, Todd. And also, if we want like canonically a reason why she's not wearing wigs, there was a lice epidemic. She's getting them all cleaned just in case, you know, that's what we could point at. But yeah, that aspect of this episode is always very heartwarming to me, like getting to see the parents just be able to like bask in the glow of their children's success is just so lovely. And speaking of, let's talk through the store launch, the store opening. I really felt for David Stewart, because this is difficult, right? Like he's nervous. He's nervous that he just spent all this time and money and energy, and this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where he will find out if he will be successful or not. And so there's a lot riding on this, and I think he's just nervous to. I think that's why he wants a soft launch. He's like, well, we can like dip our toes in and see what friends and family think. And he's trying to attract business with like a 25% off discount. And I really felt for him. This is like, because this is something that he knows he's invested all of himself in versus his parents' money, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that with them paying for all of his exhibitions in the past, I think that really shook his confidence, because yeah, it's not the same as it once was, but then he's also had the rug pulled out from him, because he always thought initially that he was the kind of creator of his own success. And then to find out that it was attributed to other people, surely even if you are assured with what you're doing, if you've got Patrick there kind of like singing your praises, you're still going to have that doubt of what if I was only ever successful because of them paying for it. there's so much unknown. Like, and I think what with David's pessimism that he always exhibits, he's always going to go to that rather than thinking, well, I could have been this success on my own before had they not paid Freya, but he'll never know. But so he'll always go to like kind of what the worst is. So to see this come out from him wanting to do a soft launch rather than and like bring in the discounts and stuff like that is so sad in a way, because he should have confidence in what he's doing. Everyone is telling him that it's a good idea. And I think it's funny to see David go through the day and for this soft launch to kind of like spiral a little bit away from what he envisioned it to be, but him to focus on the negatives of that rather than seeing the positives of, holy shit, there's a lot of people coming and a lot of people that are excited to come as well. And they're all going to come and spend money. It's not until the end where he sees it in practice that really kind of clicks. And I've just got to sing the praises of Patrick for it, because if it wasn't for Patrick pushing him and poking him into a direction of appreciating what good he does do, but also pushing him out of his comfort zone into trying things that he's not willing to do, maybe it wouldn't have been as much of a success. I still think it would have been, but I think obviously with Patrick kind of putting the word out, it was more of a success.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Todd, you mentioned it at the top of the podcast. Patrick and David make such a great pair. And I mean that in multiple ways, right? Like business partner wise, right? The little things that David, you know, isn't focused on, getting the electrician in to fix the lights and, you know, those sorts of things, the businessy side of things, Patrick really excels at. Whereas the creative side, that is all David. So they really are just a perfect fit for one another. And on top of that, I think personality wise, they really mesh well together as well. Like Patrick is very even keeled. He doesn't seem to be rattled easily. David is just rattling at all times, I think. Like he's a little bit more of an anxious mess. And so I think they just balance each other so well. And to, on top of that, have the banter that they have, I think is what like immediately endears people to these two, is that they can kind of joke back and forth about the open bottle of juice and who has a sloppy mouth. And it's just like, it's just fun the whole time.
Yeah. Patrick does such a good job of grounding David, and David's never fully grounded. You just cannot fully ground David, but Patrick keeps him from completely spinning off into the stratosphere whenever his anxieties are happening. And, you know, David can only do so many things in a day. So Patrick has to be one to kind of pick up the slack for the more mundane things, but Patrick's learning. We saw that with the frame that he picked out for the birthday present last time. So Patrick's starting to learn that, but yeah, they really complement each other with their skills and their temperaments. And because I think Patrick never would have like gone into a business by himself. Patrick never would have had like the ideas for this, but he recognizes the potential and is willing to invest in that potential. But Patrick wouldn't have come up with the idea of like doing the locally sourced products under the Rose Apothecary brand. And so their skill sets mesh really well. And then, yeah, just the banter, like you said, the one of my, I know I said like the 96 of obligation is one of my favorite lines there, but the, no, you have a sloppy mouth from Patrick after the whole sloppy mouth, like that callback is just great. Cause it's just like, so, you know, it's a little, the little, it's kind of stone faced, but also there's a little bit of a gotcha, you know, hoist on your own petard there that he does. Like just the little digs that he does, but they're so obviously good natured, loving digs. It's like the, between friends, it's not like the nasty put downs. It's just like friends ribbing each other. And you know, we saw
it's old, very flirty almost. Like I feel like sloppy mouth is like a very flirty thing to say, as well as sharing someone's juice feels like very intimate. Like I wouldn't just share juice with anybody, you know?
Yeah. If I will ding Patrick for anything, it's like just randomly drinking a juice that David had already gotten out. It's just like,
yeah, they can be sick. On. You don't know.
Come on.
I am so glad that you're on the same page to be with that, guys, because I was like there watching. I know they're flirting. I know that, like, kind of maybe they're a bit more kind of like intimate than other people are. No, don't just drink someone else's juice. That's just a no-no. Whether you are in a relationship or not, you still are.
Oh, so, okay. So my question would be like, let me think about this. If I was out somewhere, I think I would if I was like dying of thirst, I would just take a sip of my husband's drink. Like I wouldn't think twice about it. I wouldn't do that with anybody else on this planet though. Like I would ask anybody else first before I did it. But Will, no, I would just take a sip. Yeah. I think
that's because you guys already do like adult, you guys already do adult kissing.
So we already have sloppy mouths. Yeah, yeah. So might as well. Yeah, it is gross. My very first boyfriend, I remember his grandmother had a thing, like a very specific nitpick. She was like, we don't share cups. So like, if I remember, I had a huge faux pas. I like drank out of his cup or something. At her house, and she was like, we don't share cups. And I was like, sorry. And I'm like 17, so I'm like shitting my pants, you know, like I'm terrified. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it is very cute though. It is like something very intimate about sharing a juice. But I do love that this like lovely moment of them hugging at the end of the episode after like the success of the opening. And the lights just start flickering. Like that is what breaks it up. You know, that it breaks the tension immediately. And it's like, well, okay, well, we got to get an electrician in here or more YouTube videos.
And it's long also hug. It was a long hug. But I think it's also nice that Patrick wasn't perfect. Like he like came in, he watched a bunch of YouTube videos to do the lighting and it worked for a while, but he obviously wasn't perfect at it and was going to like had to get someone in. And I like that because I feel like other sitcoms, like, oh, Patrick's the perfect guy, is doing it's most other sitcoms, people are completely super competent or super incompetent and not like a nice, you know, normal level of like, oh yeah, I watched some videos and I think I got this figured out. And even Patrick was like, yeah, we'll probably have to call someone in later. I'm not 100% sure I did it all right. But I thought that was a nice touch to, again, to ground Patrick as a character, as a more realistic character than just like this perfect guy who's coming in and doing everything, you know, perfectly. I like that you have like the little, he's human. He has, you know, I wouldn't call it a flaw necessarily. Like the drink thing was a flaw, but the light thing was just like, he's not perfect. He, you know, strives and tries, but he wasn't just the immaculate handyman immediately.
Yeah, he'd been so unlikable if he had come in and just fixed everything and made it perfect. And I love that there is this kind of equilibrium between them of like, well, he can give that stuff a go and he can be the trier and he can kind of like adapt to things and fix lights based on stuff on YouTube. But David still gets to get on his high horse and be like, well, you didn't do it exactly right, did you? This is why we call the electrician. And there is this kind of good way of them being able to poke each other in the right ways of just like kind of having a bit of banter between each other.
Mm-hmm. I will say, I don't know, Stuart, if you noticed, but the frame of the with the business license in it, it's still that silver frame that Patrick bought. David didn't buy a different one, which I think is notable, like that David didn't just go out and replace it with like a black frame that would have probably been a bit more of his style. So I do think it's like worth noting that it is there and it is like front and center. Like you see it anytime you're at the register, that's what you're seeing. So I don't know, kind of nice that he didn't.
I think if it was anyone else, I think he would do it. I think he would change up that frame and make an excuse. He'd be like, oh, it doesn't really fit the aesthetic of the store. Like, if it's going to be out on display, then it really should reflect the aesthetic. And the fact that he doesn't, the fact that hug went on a little too long, the fact that they're clearly flirting, it's happening.
Well, speaking of things happening, we have to talk about this Alexis and Ted moment. Stuart, you messaged me when this happened, and I knew exactly what you were referring to. When, I don't know. I don't remember why. Was it just, oh my God? I really can't remember what the heck you even said.
I'm trying to scroll back to see if I can find it, because it was just, it was as typically an all caps message.
So tell me your thoughts on this moment, Stuart. Oh, here we go. It was Jessica and in all caps, then Jessica in all caps even bigger, and then a gif of some woman with a megaphone yelling Jessica, and you said, I'm 5 minutes into the episode, something has happened. So there you go, that was your reaction.
Yeah, I was quite excited. I don't know, because we've been talking about this for ages, and it happened. Like, it was so natural. They just went kissed, and it was suitably awkward immediately after. I love how Alexis was like so rocked by it almost, that she was like fumbling with the phone, pretending to dial. And the moment he would left, she kind of hung it back up and then was like, oh, like
incredible physical acting by Annie Murphy. Like, truly incredible, especially because, to your point, Stuart, I feel like Alexis doesn't get rocked by social situations very often. You know, she's usually pretty composed when it comes to social, navigating social stuff. And so for her to be like that, just completely knocked back by a kiss, is pretty interesting.
It is, because like, she's the one that tells everyone. It's like, don't care what others think about you, kind of thing. So she's the one that goes with it, but she clearly cares what Ted thinks. But Ted's just being a responsible, stupid, annoying boss. Is being like, oh no, we can't do this. Stop being boring, Ted.
HR violation. We love that.
I mean, honestly, for a TV show, that is kind of exciting to have a boss who actually respects those boundaries.
Yeah. Considering Todd is on a podcast that routinely has to talk about a teacher-student inappropriate relationship, this is nice to see.
Yeah. You can like list almost every other show has at least one relationship where you're just like, yeah, no, the power dynamic there is way off. Some of these shows that are great, I don't love that the boss and his employee are dating. That's just not great. So to have Ted be like, yeah, no, we probably should, you know, not do this, is, you know, good on Ted.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, it happens as a result of Alexis finding out she passed her classes, which is so lovely. And the funniest part to me is, again, I don't know if things are different in Canada. They must be, because the passing grades for Canada, I assume, is maybe like 50%. Here in America, most of the time, I don't know every state, but most of the time it's like 65% is what you need to pass. And she got under 65, but still managed to pass, which I appreciate, Todd, that she didn't get like 90s or 100s or anything. It was like, no, she got like the bare minimum and she squeaked on by and she's done.
Yeah, but she did do better than the class average, which I also liked, you know, that she was like just barely, just like 2 points up, 2 or 3 points above each of those numbers. But she still wasn't, you know, below average or at average. She like did a little bit better, but it's also, you know, not a brainiac, but she still did what was needed and a little bit more, just barely. But I did like that. And the excitement of like, I was above average and I passed, is like just really, really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talk about the quality of this show compared to other sitcoms. And like we said it earlier, I'll say it again. It's the classy choices they make with these little things, because I think a lesser one would have had her completely ace it or fail it, and it would be this kind of like real she like scraped by or one some extreme, but to have her just be just a smidge better than most in the class shows that not only did she take it seriously, but it's realistic. Jocelyn clearly hasn't like given her a pass or anything like that. Like Jocelyn, when she was even marking it before, when she had the rewrite of the essay that Johnny like edited, she got a C minus on her own back for it. Or is it a B minus? I can't remember. It was something minus, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And but it wasn't perfect. And it's these classy choices of just having things grounded in a slight realism, but spinning them a little bit positively, which makes it just all the more believable and all the more so that you want to root for them. But to see a pass as well, like,
yeah,
did it.
It's so exciting. And you could tell, like, she's excited. Obviously, it like, kind of, like, leads to their kiss. And I love the interaction between Ted and Alexis and Moira and Johnny at Rose Apothecary when Ted's like, oh, did you tell them? And she's like, oh, Ted and I had this, like, kind of awkward. He's like, no. About you passing your glasses. It's just so cute. And I really love, Todd, that we get that moment with Ted and Alexis outside after they shop where he gives her the stick pencil that he's like, it costs way more than I thought it would. I hate when they don't put the prices on it. I'm like, me too, Ted. Same. But she goes to try to kiss him and he stops her. Like he's being the responsible one, the adult in the room in this moment.
Yeah, which in some ways isn't surprising because just from the whole work environment, you know that he's the adult in the room. Just like the whole conversation, like, yeah, if the grades are bad, I might have to take the afternoon off. It's like, nope, that's not going to happen. You know, it might be completely, yeah. I know. But still, like, he is being the adult in the room, which is, like, something you come to expect from Ted. But also, he's the one who, like, proposed to her after a very short period of dating and went, like, overboard with the romantic stuff. So, yeah, it's maybe a little surprising that he's not diving back in at the first opportunity here, but I think he was hurt by it so much that he has like kind of like grown and is like not wanting to expose his heart to that danger again. So he's like, yeah, I can see this is a slippery slope. And we're saying that it's just adult kissing. Like whenever your parents kiss their friends, like, guess that's a thing that happens. I'm not really
I am not a big proponent of like kissing your friends. Like if you do you, I guess is how I feel, but like I'm not looking to like exchange germs with all my friends constantly. No. You know, I'm not even really a hug person, so I'm like certainly not a kiss person to people I don't know, and definitely not a mouth kiss to like people that I'm you know, like, no.
I feel like there's a level to it. Like there's hugging, juice sharing, kissing on the mouth. Like you've got to graduate up those tiers before you even like come to any of that stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, the Ted and Alexis stuff was really sweet and just adorable. Stuart, being that this is the penultimate episode of the season, we only have one episode left. Like where do you predict this going?
She's gotta go to college, right? Or some sort of like after. I think she'll get the education bug, and I think that this will be a boot up the bum for her to quit so that she can not only pursue things for Ted, but I think also like just get more education. Like I can see Alexis perhaps studying a bit more, maybe. At least I hope. I don't know.
Okay.
And giving a good excuse for like, oh, now I'm no longer employed by you, Ted. Oh. And then for Ted to then maybe, I don't know, turn her down a little bit more and then be like, and then she has to do a bit of chasing for him. And then the equilibrium between them is level and then they can get together and it'll be sweet. I don't know. I want to see that happen.
Okay. I do need to bring up one more, just a tiny plot point before we get into some feedback here. We got like a half Bob Jog. This episode wasn't full blown Bob Jog. Like it's a blink and you miss it. Like he barely did it, but I had to just, you know, and the whole thing with him and Gwen and they would be like, who's Gwen?
And then oh, good laughed. One, David. One thing I wanted to bring up is the scene where Johnny moves the picture into the office and Stevie reacting to it, because that whole thing puts everything out of Stevie's mouth, and that is great. It's like, been meaning to have my family portrait airlifted in, or
it seems a little it feels like she's watching me. Yeah.
It seems a little extra for a great haul, you know, just everything. But also, Johnny, you've completely blocked the service desk. There's no way people can do their job with the painting right there.
Really, what they should have done is just turned it around and used it as like a screen for an outdoor drive-in. Like, it's so huge. Like, what else are you going to do with this thing? It takes up the entire motel room if you laid it like flat down. Like, Moira's sheets won't even cover it.
Yeah. I love that they're trying to like hide it with sheets. Just turn it around, maybe. Like, why
too much effort to turn it around?
I don't know. Maybe it can cover up those ugly bricks that are in the rooms, because I look at them every time and I'm like, they're stacked. They're not even like proper bricks. Like, you know how you meant to like alternate them. It gives me anxiety. I'm like, that's bad bricklaying. <That's
terrible. laughs> Call a mason. anything else you, either of you want to talk about before we get into the feedback?
I wanted to ask about the twig pen. So thing.
It just feels like something you would buy at these like kitschy little small shops, but like, does anybody actually use, like, that looks uncomfortable to write with. It would be awkward to try to like store it. I just don't understand the purpose of this, and it doesn't feel like it fits Alexis at all.
Yeah, Alexis looks a little delicate. I'm like, I don't think delicate's the word I would use for that. Yeah. Like, no. Cumbersome. Cumbersome is the word I would use for it.
Yeah.
Shaky, but it is awkward.
Difficult, unwieldy, just all the bad, like, descriptors. We've got a thing called National Trust over here, which is like an entity that kind of looks over, like, historical buildings and, like, national park kind of, like things. And they always have gift shops. That would be in one of those gift shops. I don't see what it's doing in an apothecary that is selling body butter or body milk and all these kind of what seem to be, I don't know, quite, I guess, because I mean, it's not,
I mean, they're also
just
selling the tea. So.
Well, that is true, yeah.
Which I love, was it Roland who says like, oh, I loved tea in high school or something like that. I started drinking tea in high school.
Yeah.
So funny.
But they're also selling like scarves and things like that. It's, you know, so it's, I think it's just like, local people make stuff and David sells it. So this is like some local housewife has decided to do this arts and crafty thing and is giving it to David to sell. And David's gone, okay, we'll take this little arts and crafty thing and we'll just like upsell the hell out of it so that, you know.
Oh, it's just Etsy.
Yeah, basically. It's Etsy the store. The Etsy, the brick and mortar store is what we're going for here. I also just want to mention the physical comedy of Alexis and her hanging up the phone, but also there's the, after they have the conversation about the kiss and she's like, all right, got to go back to work. Go, you know, echoing what he said earlier, and she's backing out and then backs into, well, she has her little like T-Rex arms up and she's doing the backing out the entire time. Cracks me up. Just some, again, some great physical comedy from Annie Murphy.
It's really perfect. Like, Annie Murphy is doing work this episode. Like, it's incredible. All right, let's get into some feedback here. We heard from Trish, who says, it's so pleasing to see David's store doing so well. It seems that there's a market for his curated high-end products after all. He didn't need to be so worried, but I think it was cute that he was. Which, yeah, I think it just shows like he has an investment in this doing well, the store performing well.
Completely. I mean, he's taking it seriously as well, which is great. Yeah.
And I can see why he'd be worried, because he's trying to sell high-end stuff in Schitt's Creek. So there is kind of that idea, like, maybe this is too much for this small town. But I think the fact that it is like products, maybe people from the community or from the area, you know, lends it a little bit more of a, this might be a frou-frou stick pin, but it, you know, Gladys down the road made this frou-frou stick pin. And so, you know, we're going to support local business type thing to kind of push past like the artsiness of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also got an email from Sophie. who says, "Dear Justin Stewart, love you guys in the podcast and all that. ... which is very foreboding. I had to write in because I'm deeply upset by all the Johnny slander. Stewart is such a meanie. I love Johnny. Sure, he's a bumbling idiot most of the time, but he has no malice and doesn't deserve all of Stewart's disdain. Although, the way Stewart feels about Johnny, you could say is the way I feel about Moira. So I guess turnabout is fair play. At least we're all in agreement that Alexis is the best, is a queen, and deserves all our praise.
Yes.
A lot of times after listening to the podcast, I find myself continuing with the show and binging it. And lately, I find myself giving out simply the best and disgruntled Pelican points.
Yeah.
And I'm also wondering how you guys, but mainly Stuart, will be dishing out points, telling myself there's no way Stuart can give Johnny disgruntled Pelican points. And yet he does.
Buckle in.
Yeah, the challenge accepted.
Oh, gosh. And yet he does. Sad face, mind you. You, I rarely give Johnny simply the best points, but... let's face it, at this point in the show for me, I have to find a way not to give them to Alexis. I'm like, she said something nice. Points for Alexis. On the other hand, I have to find a way to not give them to Roland. He's my de facto disgruntled Pelican. I have a personal vendetta against Roland as he's the reason why many friends and family haven't been able to get into the show and past season one. And that offends and saddens me. They just can't get past how disgusting and offensive he is. Which is fair. Like, I mean, I would hold a grudge against Roland for that reason as well. But Sophie has issued you a challenge, Stuart. You called Johnny's act of giving Moira the Rose Garden a little selfish. My challenge is for you to name to me a selfless good deed, friend style. Remember Joey's premise, there are no selfless good deeds, as at the very least, you feel good about yourself after doing something nice. And that's why Phoebe being a surrogate for her brother couldn't be considered entirely selfless. So yes, Stuart, can you name a selfless good deed?
Sophie's going about getting disgruntled Pelican with this. Because I'm totally called out. I can't name a selfless good deed. Totally right. We are a little bit. I'm a little bit harsh on Johnny.
I haven't done anything. I get roasted on a different podcast for being mean about someone. I'm not taking it on this one. I'm nice to everyone on this podcast.
What I will say is there's always scope for me to be meaner, and I will.
I'll say, yeah, I would not have said that Stuart was being mean to Johnny and any of the disgruntled Pelican stuff, personally. But
he's harsh. He's a little harsh to Johnny.
Maybe a little harsh. But yeah. But also, I guess I tend to agree with Stuart on the Johnny take. So maybe I'm not the right person to be impartial here. Because I would say I have a very low tolerance for cringe humor at times. And Johnny stuff, last episode, everything with him with the couple in the hotel room, I was if that got on any longer, I would have lost it because it was just so painful to sit through. And I think a lot of Johnny stuff hits that mark, and so that's why I'm more prone to give Johnny my own disgruntled Pelican points, because he does lean to that cringe stuff, and he means well, but he fumbles it, and
fumbles a lot, and I think that's the tricky thing.
And I think one thing with the Scrolls of Pelicans, we don't always have Roland in every episode, so sometimes
it's not always obvious who it should be. And in fact, in this episode, I'll argue it's very difficult to come up with a character who has earned a negative point, because that's essentially what these are, is disgruntled Pelican point, you're getting a minus from whatever your score is. And so sometimes it's hard, and Johnny ends up falling into that category because maybe he's the one who fumbled a bit. But actually, speaking of feedback about Johnny, my husband commented on our YouTube channel last week and said, "Justice for Johnny." And I knew he would be upset because he loves Johnny. So there are Johnny people out there. There really are. And I think Johnny is the kind of character who's never going to be my favorite. And I don't mean that as a slight against Johnny. I am the person who loves the out there extra characters like David, like Moira. Johnny is your steady Eddie. And I think that's why people like my husband and maybe Sophie like him, is he is that kind of reliable dad character. And it also probably is helped by he's played by Eugene Levy. Like, not everyone could be as charming as Eugene Levy is in this role.
No, if it was anyone else playing it, it would be, I think, justified disgruntled Pelican a lot of times. Because the delivery just wouldn't be there. I think I default to Johnny a lot because it's the symptom of him being the straight guy in the comedy duos. There's always someone more eccentric that he's playing off of, which is why I think the pairing with Stevie works so well, because Stevie is that straight guy in the comedy duo all the time. Like, she's the one that is the kind of like hard wall that David is kind of bouncing up against with all these stupid kind of ideas and things. Mm-hmm. So for Johnny to have that, and for Johnny to then be allowed to have these kind of more absurd kind of moments, like the portrait is ridiculous when you think about it. Like, it maybe makes sense in the kind of lore of Schitt's Creek, what with what they've been through, like their history of these like kind of multi-millionaires. Of course they would have a portrait like this. But when you look at it, it's a big portrait of them. It's ridiculous and it is absurd. But I think we kind of, because we're in the world now and this doesn't seem that absurd, it kind of lowers that absurdity level a little bit. So, but it's nice for Johnny to be able to have that kind of like role now, which I do like. Maybe I should stop giving it to him as default.
Well, we'll talk about it because we're going to have to give out some points this episode.
I was going to say, because this episode is tough.
No, we'll struggling. I have a pitch. I have a pitch once we get there.
I have a pitch for someone too. So.
Okay, great.
Oh, so fantastic.
Let me finish Sophie's email. She concluded with, in all seriousness though, I love the podcast and your banter. Really looking forward to the end of season 3 and season 4, which is my favorite. Warmest regards and best wishes, Sophie. So thank you so That's much, wonderful. Sophie. We're not giving you a disgruntled Pelican point. If Stuart ever tried to do that, I'd give you a simply the best point and it would keep it out, so it's fine.
I wouldn't dare. I'd say it's all in jest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to our ratings. Speaking of, so we have our simply the best and disgruntled Pelican point. Let's start with simply the best. Todd, who was simply the best for you this episode?
This was a super hard episode to come up with choices for both categories because so many people are great in this episode and there aren't very many people who aren't great in this episode. I think I was struggling the most. I was going back and forth between Patrick and David. I think like my two top ones, Patrick is, I love Patrick as a character. And I think this episode shows, you know, why he's such a great character, but he's just not in it a ton. And a lot of it is just David. And I think just for David, yeah, he was spiraling a little bit, but he pulled through and he stuck to his guns about what he wanted. And in the end, he could see the positive of like the rush and just David getting a win, I think earns him my simply the best point for this episode.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Stuart, what about you?
Two really good contenders there. I mean, of course, Alexis did say some positive things. So, of course, she's in the running because she is queen, as discussed. but no, I kind of look at it to Moira. I look at the fact that she gave Johnny a very sweet gift at the beginning. Like she'd almost like, she almost gave up she became quite humble in accepting the portrait and having to deal with those human vultures to kind of get it and to give it to Johnny, recognizing that he would probably appreciate it despite it being massive, despite it being ridiculous. And then at the end, when Johnny tries to come up with a solution, Moira just gives some good wisdom and truth. So I'm going to give it to Moira for that. I think that she had a good episode.
Okay. One for Moira and one for David. I agree. Like there's so many contenders that it's difficult. For me, I was battling between David and Alexis. I think David is hard. He's launching his store, something that he has put so much time and energy and heart and money into. And it is terrifying for him because of the false assumption that he had that his His art gallery was doing well back in New York. And it turns out his parents were like funding the entire thing under, you know, without him knowing. And so that's a lot for David to have to go through. And he obviously is very successful this episode. And Alexis, like, she did graduate. And that is like no small feat, especially that many years removed from high school. You know, she put in hard work while working a full-time job. Like, there's a lot going on with Alexis. I also, like, part of me is like, do I give it to Alexis? Also in part because Annie Murphy just has like the best physical comedy this episode. She cracks me up. I also love her little braid that she has when she goes shopping with Ted at Rose Apothecary. I really struggled with who to give this point to. Ultimately, I think I am going to give it to David, but it's like, it's marginally, you know, like I think they both could potentially be in the running there. But ultimately, I think like the success David has with the store, especially knowing his history with the art gallery, it tipped it in his favor. So I am going to give David my point.
I want to jump in just before we go on to the Disgruntled Pelican. That's a really great point about the whole risk element with David's thing as well, because that money from the Blast Barn, that's not money that he's likely to get again. And that was really kind of fluky money that he came into. I well earned from what he did, but it was a very fluky situation to get into. And to take that being your first real success in this whole thing and to invest it in yourself is a huge kind of undertaking and a leap of faith in your own kind of abilities. I just want to shout that out a bit because I think that's a really good point to make.
Okay. Todd, I want to hear from you. What is your pitch on the Disgruntled Pelican for this week? Because it's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, you know, Johnny blocked off the hotel desk. No, I'm joking.
How dare you?
No.
He did.
Yeah. Like I said, it's really difficult because even characters like Roland, I have a hard time even doing with Roland because I don't think Roland did anything super egregious in this episode.
No, him and the tea, I started drinking tea in high school, freaking killed me. Funny.
And him, I love the joke of at the beginning whenever Johnny's trying to get David to help him and Roland's going, I'll help you for $20. And then just going up each time and just like, I can keep going up, you know, like being very aware of what he's doing and not just a clueless Roland. I think that Roland's really funny in this episode. The only thing that I can maybe give him for is like, whenever like, who's that lady in the back? That's Moira. Flattering. But still, it was funny. So I can't really give him it for that. The only person in this episode that I feel really deserves this Disgruntled Pelican is the person in line for the store who curses David out.
Darlene's cousin.
I am headcanning that's part of Twilight's family. I am headcanning that is part of Twilight's family there that we always hear stories about. But yeah, that customer, the disgruntled customer in line is...
What did she say? Who the F are you? Is that what she said?
Yeah.
I love it.
I have a hard time for anyone
Well, let me give you my pitch because actually mine was different. I did think of that, Todd. I did think about the lady who cusses out David in line. My other option was the Van Helsings for stealing the Rose family portrait. Why? Why? Like, Moira calls them vultures, but like, why would you want a massive portrait of someone else's family? It makes no sense. And it's such a weird thing to steal.
I think I'd be more in line with that if we'd actually gotten to see them in the episode.
That's the problem that I had too.
Yeah. Because we hear about the Van Helsings, the human vultures, but we don't get to see them. If we got to see them, then yeah, I would be probably on board with giving the human
vultures. Maybe we just need to give a disgruntled pelican point to all of Twyla's family because they kind of all sound terrible. Every last one of them. What about you, Stuart? Where were you thinking of going with this?
Like, I've gone through everyone that is in this episode and even everyone that's referenced in this episode. Because I was like, I think you can earn it by being off screen. I'm going to rule that for myself now to give us a little leeway as these characters get more and more lovable as we go along. I'm going to ruffle some feathers here. I'm giving it to Bob. For two reasons.
We got a half jog.
Only a half jog. Not a full Bob jog.
Don't have the full redeeming quality of Bob here. We only have half of it.
But really?
Because him and Gwen both want their own plus one.
Yes.
Like, I knew it. I knew someone was going to say that. I knew it. I was trying to deflect off of him with the Van Helsing to be like, no one could possibly give it to Bob for him. But I think then Twyla's, what is it, her stepfather or something wants to bring his like secretary or something ridiculous?
Twyla is a friend. So that's somewhat acceptable in my books. Bob is just Bob. Like, what is. Who is Bob to is David? Like
almost Johnny's business partner. He rented out space to Johnny in his garage.
And then he subsequently gave it away to a kid. Yeah.
He's Johnny's friend. He invites him to his poker night. It's like a family friend. I love Bob. I can't. I won't.
I don't. No.
Okay, so let's lock things in. We've had enough discussion about this. It is a difficult episode to want to dock anybody points. Todd, where are you landing? Who's getting your disgruntled pelican point?
Yeah, I'm sticking with my
Darlene's cousin.
Darlene's cousin.
I'm sticking with Darlene's cousin.
Great.
Let's see if she's able to bring her points up. I'm sure we'll see loads of her in the future.
Stuart, what about you?
Bob. In brackets, and Gwen. I will accept you giving them half points if you wish.
So upsetting. I'm going to go with Todd and just do Darlene's cousin, because she is way worse. Who the F are you? Like, lady. Mm-hmm. Like, this is his store. What are you doing?
Because he's even said it by that point. Like, it's his store.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. I can't wait until we get a strongly worded email, Stuart, about all the Bob hate on this podcast, because
Jess is writing it and using a fake.
I will.
Yeah. But yeah.
A mysterious email shows up. okay. That's our rating for this episode. It is time, of course, to tier rank the episodes. We have our tier rankings as follows: Hot Shit, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey for Me, Ew, David, and Shit Out of Luck. Stuart, you said that you thought this was maybe your favorite episode of the season. Where you want to put it?
Hot Shit. Like, straight in, top of the pile. I even think it might even be up there ahead of New Car. I love it that much.
I think it depends on what you're going for, Todd, right? Because New Car, I think, probably has more, like, full belly laughs. Friends and Family has more heartwarming moments. So, like, I think it's... right, what everyone prefers of which of those things you'd prefer. But what do you think, Todd?
Yeah, I think I'm with Stuart here. I think that's probably where I would place it. I'll admit I do tend to prefer the more jokey episodes, but whenever Schitt's Creek hits the emotional stuff, it's some of the best stuff on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a super sappy person at times, so I also am very cynical when it comes to like my TV watching, but Schitt's Creek is one of the shows that wormed its way inside my heart and just, you know, makes me tear up occasionally. And yeah, I think this episode does a really good job of giving all of the roses a win in one way or another, even if it's just like basking in pride at their children, but something that and realizing, you know, a lesson about their own life and moving forward from, you know, not clinging onto the past. I think that it's just all done really well and put together really well. Again, this is an episode where we had to struggle to find someone to shout out as a disgruntled pelican. And I think that kind of shows like the strength of the storytelling of the episode and the emotional beats of the episode.
Yeah, all three storylines were incredible this episode. I can't remember, like, obviously I remember the New Car, like Moira and Johnny going to the dealership and that being absolutely hysterical. I don't really recall a lot of the other storylines going on in that episode. And I just think because this has heartwarming bits and really funny bits, I do think it probably belongs at the top of the heap here in Hot Shit.
Yeah.
So,
I mean... But if we did want a reminder for what happened in New Car, I mean, I'm just going
to
say...
Exciting beyond compare. Yes. Especially with this being our first ever purchase of an automobile.
Oh, my God. Or...
£1,000, love.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
£6,000, love. incredible. No, I think deservedly so. This is going to be at the top of the heap. The question is, though, will it stay there? Because coming up on the season 3 finale next week, Stuart, are you ready to hear the title of the season
3 finale? I am indeed.
Okay. It is called Grad Night.
We're getting a party. We're getting a party. Ted and Alexis is going to quit, and her and Ted are going to hook up. I predict that.
So that will be next week. I mean, I don't think it's like going to be surprising to hear that. Like, I mean, listen, I've said this on like every podcast I'm on. I love a premiere and I love a finale. And yeah, like, Schitt's Creek finales are incredible. So I'm so excited to talk about next week's episode next week. It's going to be so much fun. It's grad night, baby. This one is really great too. Obviously, like, it's the top of the pile, but I'm going to be interested to see if it retains its position after next week's episode, considering it's a finale and finales are big. They're events, you know?
Yeah. I will say the finale was like my number one pick of an episode to be on for, but someone had beat me to the punch. So.
Yeah. So grad night next week. Very excited. Thank you so much, Todd, for coming on yes. and chatting with us and debating out with us who deserved that disgruntled pelican. Because coming into this podcast, I was like, I truly have no idea who I'm going to do this to. Like, no one deserves this episode. Everyone's great. I love them all.
Yeah, well, thank you all for having me on. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk some shit. So happy to be here.
Where else can people find you, Todd? I know you have a ton going on over at Whirlwind Podcasts.
Yeah, she can find me over on Whirlwind Podcasts and a few different things. Over on One Indescribable Podcast, Adam, Lindy, and I are going through the Apple TV series Schmigadoon, but we're not just watching Schmigadoon. We're also watching the musicals that inspired Schmigadoon. So we'll watch episodes of Schmigadoon and pair it with a musical that was like an inspiration for either a story or songs or both. So far, we've watched Oklahoma, Carousel, Sound of Music, Guys and Dolls, Brigadoon. This next week, we'll be watching The Music Man as we are nearing the end of season 1 of Schmigadoon. So that's been Andy has not. So getting to see where we all fall in these kind of golden age of musicals, which some of them don't necessarily hold up really well, but still have some amazing music in them. That's been fun. We also are doing Previous Little Liars, where I lead Adam, Lindy, and our friend Marissa through the show Pretty Little Liars, but we only watch the previously ons. And I'm the only one who's actually seen Pretty Little Liars. And I just get to sit there and try to keep a straight face as they make some of the most insane predictions about what's happening and why things are happening. Poison glasses is still my favorite theory that Adam had about how a character got blinded is that they poisoned her glasses somehow. So that's always a lot of chaotic fun. And then I also do a podcast called Tuning In with Tommy, where we talk about cartoons. We're on a little bit of a hiatus right now, but I am dropping parody songs every 2 weeks of old cartoon theme songs in the meantime. And then we'll pick up again in January with a slightly revised format from what we've done in the past. And we'll be having an announcement about that coming soon.
Incredible. Stuart, so anything not. Else you want to tell people about or where they can find you? Anything like that?
No, nothing going on. Find me on the socials, Stuart Drinks Tea. We're on the blue sky. Everyone go on there. It's lovely. It's none of the politics and all the dog pictures. It's wonderful.
You can find me at the Just Sterling on the aforementioned blue ski. And go find Shit 90 Shows Taught Me now on YouTube. We've launched a YouTube channel over there as well. So go check that out. Sarah and I launched it. We premiered it with a presentation via slides, Google Slides, where I told her all about the truly unhinged movie North.
Like, you're welcome.
Thank you, Todd. Todd recommended it. It is unhinged and there's like so many famous people in it. So go check out the presentation. Even if you don't watch the movie, honestly, you kind of don't need to. Be Sarah. Just enjoy the show. So go check that out. And next week, we'll be back with season 3, episode 13, aka the season 3 finale, Grad Night. So until then, everyone, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Hey, At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.